presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Here's Woolley sending it across. He's pulled there.
And there's that second goal that the Buffalo Sabres have been searching for tonight. 11:19 to go in the period, and the two defensemen, Bugner and Jason Woolley, after taking a beating in Game 3 against the Stevenson Bureau line, connect with a great passing play as Bugner hits Donald Odette perfectly, and just horrible coverage by Thornton as he did not get position on Donald Odette. And when you have a goal scorer going to the net, you better tie up his stick. Thornton didn't, and it's in the net.
Donald Odette delivers the game winner and series clincher in a 4-0 sweep of Montreal on this date back in 1998, as Buffalo is heading into Game 4 tonight against the Canadiens in need of a win to even the series.
Lots to talk about Game 4, obviously, tonight, but I can watch old school, and I'm calling 98 old school clips because of two things. One, the wooden blades in a shaft, like the Easton stick that Bugner's got. It's got a wooden blade. You just have to heat up the glue, put them in, let them cool off, and the whole thing. And a face-off that is not at a dot. Like, this was a neutral zone face-off, nowhere near a dot, just in
Producer
the middle
Sam
of the ice.
Special.
Absolutely. They used to put the face-offs everywhere. Let's do it over here. The linesman would actually put his heels in the ice to make a little mark. Like, is where I'm going to drop it. Like, come on. Like, I mean, this is old school, but yes. A Game 4 sweep in Montreal in 98. Now Game 4 in Montreal. Sabres looking to tie it up at 2. Some changes at the morning skate this morning. I think everybody was kind of on the lookout. What's that going to look like? Who's going to play in net? Mm-hmm. What are the lines going to be on defense? What are you going to do? A few changes, and do we let people know if they're not on social media?
I think they already know.
Well, maybe they don't. Maybe they haven't checked. Maybe they tune in to get it.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is the expected starter,
yes.
Which, of course, yesterday in our discussion in studio with Owen and yourself, you had a surprise reaction when Owen said he would stay with Lyon, right?
And I said Luukkonen, and you agreed. I gave you the chance to be the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. Maybe Lindy was listening.
Well, Luukkonen does have a nice, tidy 32-save performance in Montreal this year as one of his wins on the season.
Now, listen, I mean, you can go ahead. Like, if this was the regular season, I think we would see a lot of different changes when it comes to the Sabres. I think we'd see a lot of different, you know, lines changes, maybe defense personnel changes, goalie changes. And you would give yourself 3 or 4 games to maybe say, let's see what that looks like in the regular season. You know, you win one, you lose one, whatever. You don't have 3 or 4 games. You don't have 3 or 4 periods. You got to come out with a big effort in Game 4 in Montreal. The biggest thing for me is that your identity all season long was you're using 2 goalies, you're using 3 goalies. You know, I mentioned the Lion numbers after a loss this season where he wins games in a row and then all of a sudden he loses one, and then it's like, does he get back to its winning ways? Does he need a little bit of time to get his game where he wants it to be? And that's when Luukkonen has been able to shine. Colton Ellis has been able to come in as well. So I think by the look of the morning skate, Luukkonen expected to go. He had his own net in the morning skate. And he gives you that game-changing ability. Could give you a steal of a game. Could give you a steal of a series. This is and even though people are saying that's a big pressure spot for Luukkonen to go in, I don't think it is. Not like it was Game 1 and 2 against Boston, where Luukkonen looked a little nervous, a little unsure, gives up that bad goal to Morgan Geeky. Now he's coming in, playing with house money, and all I have to do is be relaxed and play my game in a place where he's played well and getting a win this year.
So, with that being said, everything has to improve in front of whichever netminder is in, and everyone knows that. I am intrigued, though, by you and Producer Sam, you know, thinking, like, how much of our audience hadn't heard or didn't know, right, with Luukkonen. because we live in this world of alerts. So, like, even if you're driving and you haven't been actually looking at your phone, you may have got a text message based on some alert thing. You know what I mean? Like, depending on what you follow.
We live in a world of where I don't turn X alerts or whatever on my phone because they could come up at 2 a.m. and I don't want my phone to ring at that time.
I thought you just didn't want the spoiler effect.
I also don't want the spoiler. I do have certain alerts that come through, but... you know, maybe that's one that I know what time to go and fetch for the information or getting it at that time.
Someone who was also part of the 4-2 win in Montreal in the regular season was Konsta Helenius. And after being a top 10 AHL scorer this year and turning 20 years of age yesterday, it looks like Konsta will get his first NHL playoff game tonight.
Yes, so another one of those, like, what does that look like at the morning skate? Sam Carrick was wearing a gray jersey. Lindyruff mentioning on WGR 550 this morning when talking with Jeremy and Owen that, I mean, he took that punch from Harbor Jack Eye late in the game, and maybe, like, that can shake somebody up. Maybe you're not feeling all that great. Who knows, right? But he did mention that, look, Carrick was going to be one of those guys that they'd see how he's feeling today. He was in a gray jersey. So you're thinking, okay, after coming back one game, and it was only 6 minutes and whatnot, then you're looking to take Carrick out. Okay, well, who do you put in center between Greenway and Malenstein? We have talked, and you, Duffer, have talked a lot about the McLeod, Zucker, and Quinn line, that this is your depth that has not been able to give you that added support. So they are looking, the Sabres, by the way they looked at morning skate today, to keep the Thompson line together with Tuck and Krebs and insert Konsta Helenius between Quinn and Zucker. Really tried to give him that jolt and energy, and Konsta obviously playing center. The Sabres always felt like he was a true center, so we'll get to see what that looks like. Norris Benson, Doan staying together, and now McLeod between Greenway and Malenstein, and maybe saying, you know what, like our big advantage in this series was our depth. Our depth had to be able to take over Montreal's depth, and it hasn't happened yet in this series. Actually, it's the Doc, the Newhook, the Bolduc, the Evans, the Deno that have been the difference in this series. Mm-hmm. So now we're putting Helenius with Zucker and Quinn. Norris is the same, and McLeod with Greenway and Malenstein. And we can have those three lines try to dominate the bottom three lines for the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, the biggest question here is, what do you think Helenius can accomplish stepping in at this point in time? He's been idle for a couple of weeks. The Amherst had a three-game playoff, and, you know, Helenius was the same there as he was in the regular season. That was exactly a point per game. So he had 63-63 in the regular season, 3-3 in the playoffs. But what should be the expectation? And if it doesn't materialize quickly, do you think that they just put McLeod right back there and then move on?
They could. I mean, there could be a lot of changes in game. You could see McLeod go back there. You could see Helenius maybe go to the wing with Thompson and Tuck.
Yeah.
You could see Benson being elevated to maybe Thompson and Tuck, and Helenius go to the wing with Norris and Doan. You could see a lot of different things. The biggest thing for me now is that when I look at those changes up front, it is still to try to get more offense, right? You're bringing Helenius in because you want to get a player that has offensive abilities to get Zucker and Quinn going offensively. You're moving McLeod to the Greenway and Malenstein line because, you know what? These guys can provide some offense. And in the first game, that fourth line, it was Tyson Kozak in the middle at that time, but it created a lot of chances, a lot of scrambles around the net, a lot of forecheck. So you're looking at offense. Offense is great, but the Sabres are not going to tie this series up at 2 tonight unless defensively they're good. And maybe that's why Luukkonen's going in. Number one, Luukkonen looking to maybe make a couple of big saves, steal you a period or two here, but also send the message, hey, look, this guy hasn't played since game 2 of the Boston series. We're squeaky clean defensively, and we're going to let the offense grow by those changes that we made on the forward line.
What do you think it says to Thompson and Tuck and Krebs, though? Because if memory serves, that's where you were starting with potential changes yesterday, and it hasn't happened.
That's why I was deconstructing my lines by starting with the Thompson line. Like Marty said, we in game 1, after game 1, saying, we're fine. You know, I don't think Lindy Ruff is saying we're fine, but there was no changes with Marty saying we playing that. I trust you guys and let's go. I think Lindy Ruff is probably playing that same card here with Thompson. Mm-hmm. Game two was not good, obviously. Puck handling by Krebs right at the start of the game, the mistake by Thompson, the lack of offense, the lack of shot attempts. It was better in game three. Thompson scored. Mm-hmm. The power play looked better in the, you know, whatever, reconstructed top power play unit. But we also saw that back check with Tuck and Thompson, Bolduc score. So I think there's still a one more like, hey, we'll start you guys together, but, you know, I need to see something. I need to see something defensively that you are going to be responsible.
Who's got the most pressure on that line?
I think it's Tage Thompson.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think Tuck's been too happy with his
game. No, I don't think Tuck has been too happy. There was a play in the... Oh, man, I wrote it down here. It was there was a chance by Tuck in the first period where he's doing a spin in the slot, and he had a good look. But there was a play in... Maybe it was game two. Maybe I saw it from the press box. I'm trying to visualize it, where Alex was coming down the wing. I think it's game two. Came down the right wing in the first period and had a chance to maybe make a power move to the net. And he took a wrist shot that missed the net by 5 feet from outside the tops of the circles. And I'm like, where's that? Where's that jump? Where's that confidence, right? I know Alex hasn't been happy with his game. He said it in front of reporters. He said that he takes responsibility for maybe Thompson struggling with his game too, saying, I got to be better for him. I got to help him. So there is that message. Look, you've been good for us all year. We're going to trust you in there. But that, you know, that rope may be very, very short. That leash may be very short, I should say, for that top line.
So Luukkonen in goal and up front, Konsta Helenius, who played 9 regular season games. He had 4 points in his first 3, none in the final 5 and 6, pardon me, and ultimately gets a big opportunity tonight to step in a place that's been held by Ryan McLeod. And then on the blue line, there is one expected change as well. As, you know, we talked yesterday, Stanley and Timmins had a tough go among the many in game number 3. And right now, it certainly appears as though Luke Shen is expected to come in for Stanley.
Yeah, and I think Luke Shen, a little bit like Michael Kesselring coming in game 6 in Boston, it's more about, okay, you're going to have a third pair, but you're probably not going to play Shen and Timmins together all that often. You're going to start with Dahlin and Samuelson. You're going to go to Byram and Power. You may go to Dahlin and Timmins. You may go with Samuelson and Byram. You may go Power and Shen. You may switch things around in the way that you're going to rotate and handle your defense. But I don't think we're going to see Shen and Timmins on the ice, like we would see Stanley and Timmins on the ice normally. Kesselring in Boston, I mean, there was 5 shifts. There was like under 5 minutes of ice, and it was 3 in the first period, 2 in the second, and then it just, you know, somebody sits on the bench that long, you're not going to throw him into the third period and be like, okay, go get me a couple of shifts. Mm-hmm. Everybody's rolling, you got that, and things are going well. So it'll be interesting to see if Shen has, you know, 5 shifts in the first, 3, 2, whatever it is. But I think Luke Shen's also a veteran that comes in and is like, okay, now if you need a shift from me after I sit on the bench for a whole period, late in the second, early in the third, because of penalty trouble or whatnot, I'll give it to you. I'm going to go in and do it. I think there's a veteran kind of guy that can do whatever you need him to do, but I would doubt that we're going to see Shen and Timmins on the ice at the same time all that often in game 4.
Some beautiful full sunshine today. So what's your temperature for the outlook of the rest of the series? Our Sabres Live poll question at Sabres Live on this day, Marty, gives you 4 options to how you're feeling about the rest of the series.
Obviously, there is some people that are saying full confident, about 7% of those, and I can't say I'm sitting here full confident when it comes to that. But I understand where you're coming from if you have trusted that team all season long to be good, and they're going to be good. Cautiously optimistic, slight doubt, and full panic mode are all in the lead at a split 31%, all of them.
Aren't 2 of them the exact same?
Cautiously optimistic and slight doubt?
Aren't
I think
they the
it's
same?
A positive and a negative. It's like if you were What's on a scale of 1 through 4? What is your like 1, 2, 3, 4?
They're the exact same.
No, they're different. Words matter, Duffer. You know that. Doubt is negative and optimistic is positive.
Yeah, but it's not doubt. It's slight doubt, which is exactly cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, as producer Sam just said in my ear, that's okay. Glass half full versus glass half empty.
So phrase it that way next time. Well, glass half full, glass half empty.
I think that. I would be cautiously optimistic, in my opinion, if it wasn't for the defensive side of the game that has been troubling. Like if it's the offense, and I would say, go ahead and win a game 2-1 mm-hmm. or whatever, that's fine.
Yep.
But right now it feels like you're not able to keep Montreal 2-1 or 2-2. Like Montreal has been able to score 11 goals. I get it, 2 of them empty net. But still, that's 11 goals in the last 2 games mm-hmm. that you're giving up. And empty net matters. You know, we talked about it. They're 4 winners. They matter. Montreal getting those. So that's why I'm seeing slight doubt, because I want to see the defensive game be able to turn a page and be strong in game 4. So obviously there is... you know, some people that are commenting, like, if the Sabres play their game, they should be fine. That's Sen's Army. He's, you know, that person's probably an Ottawa Senators fan and wants to see the Canadians lose. So cheering for the Sabres. But if they play their game, they'll be fine. Hellenius is a game, you know, defense needs to protect the house. Like, there's the same comments. Defense has to be the name of the game in this one.
Well, the road teams are 30 and 30. 30 for 30 would be unbelievable if they had won all the games yeah. at this point in time. But yeah, 30 wins, 30 losses after last night. So Sabres historically have been good in game fours, 25 and 16 all time, including 11 and 6 on the road as they get Montreal tonight. Once again, our pregame coverage will begin here on MSG at 6:30. So happy birthday, Zach Benson,
yes.
21 today.
I always
like to get the guys who are in the lineup and their birthday acknowledgments before waiting till the end of the show. So
no,
happy birthday.
I absolutely think that's great. Hellenius was 20 yesterday. He may have gotten the word on his birthday mm-hmm. that he was going to be in the lineup. You know, maybe he got it this morning at the morning skate or whatnot, or when he saw the sheet on the wall, said, "Ooh, I'm practicing between Zucker and Quinn." Benson got up today on his birthday and was like, staying with my boy Norris and Doan, and we're going to go in and make something happen. I think that Zach Benson has been probably the best Sabres player, and especially in the last few games here with his intensity, emotions, energy, the goal in game 2, the offense that he's been able to bring. He almost had a goal in game 3, making it 4-3, like on the power play, right?
Yeah.
That would have been, he was the one in front of the net on the Dalian power play goal. Like, there is something that Benson is doing that everybody's got to be paying attention and do more of, you know, be more like Benny. That's what I would say on the wall in the locker room.
Any fallout from the fines yesterday? Malenstein for his goaltender interference and Jack Eye for his rough. You talked about Carrick being on the wrong end of that and maybe not being 100% in the words of, or, you know, suggestion from Lindy Ruff.
Yeah, so I'm fine with the fine. I actually didn't think nothing was going to come out of it. Look, I think Malenstein's a hard player in the net. Would I be like on my soapbox and screaming and yelling if that happened against the Sabres? Yes, I would. But also when I look back at it, guy making a hard play to the net. There's this collision. Look, you know, Dobesh was fine, did not hit the post hard. The head didn't hit. So it was fine. A fine is okay. And really, like the Norris play at the end of the game, the Jack Eye play, like when you get in scrums like this and everybody's in the middle, you mm-hmm. got to be on the lookout for anything. You got to be prepared for anything. And Jack Eye took liberties on Carrick, but. You know what? That's, to me, that's part of scrums at end of playoff games, sending messages, and that's what Jack Eye was doing in that play.
2 in the NHL tonight. Sabres, Habs kick it off 7 p.m. Of course, later tonight, it's Anaheim and Vegas. Last night, just the 1, Minnesota and Colorado. And halfway through this game last night, there were 4 shots on goal for the Wild. It was unbelievable how little they were able to push through with, but they did get the game's opening goal as Zhirov scored his first playoff goal. That was halfway through the first, but from that point on, Colorado, obviously, as mentioned, from a shot standpoint, took over. It took a while for them to break through, obviously, but eventually, Kadri and Colton had them in the lead in the third, and even though Minnesota was able to briefly tie it thanks to Sturm, final three belong to Colorado with a couple empty netters, and they've got a 3-1 stranglehold.
Listen, Ross Colton was fantastic in the game. He had a great chance on a breakaway that he tried to go 5-0 on Wallstead, did not score, but he was really good. He ends up with the game-winning goal. A goalie change for the Colorado Avalanche with Mackenzie Blackwood going in to starting for Scott Wedgwood after Wedgwood was pulled in game three, the first game in Minnesota, and Blackwood was good. But, you know, Ron McLean on Hockey Night in Canada, CBC Sportsnet, loves this. Well, there was no shots in the period, but it's really was 60 minutes of real time between shots because, and I guess like Minnesota did not have a shot for about an hour. Mm-hmm. Their one shot was at like 8:41 and the next shot was at 9:52 of a clock or something. Like it was over an hour between Minnesota shot. That's why I talk about defense. Like after the game where Minnesota outskated Colorado in game three, what does Colorado do? Mm-hmm. They tighten up defensively. What does the Sabre need to do? Tighten up defensively. Like I'd love to see a period where Montreal only has two or three shots in the game tonight because you're tightening up the way Colorado did.
Yeah, they obviously added a couple empty netters. Good for Nathan MacKinnon to get one of them based on what happened to him with the puck in the face from his own teammate, Devontae. That was so ugly so quickly. But
And it was an icing that should have been called mm-hmm. that didn't get called, and you know how Nathan MacKinnon is on icings, right? He's like, or on plays that don't get called, he's like kind of yelling like that should have been icing. Then he turns around, Devontae's his own teammate tries to clear the puck, hits him right in the face, and it good thing I think it hit the visor, then his nose and mouth, so he came back, but there was some blood on the play for sure.
Yeah, and a former Wild from a long time ago, Charlie Coyle, got himself a new 6-year, $6 million per deal today from Columbus, which tells you two things. It tells you that there aren't going to be an awful lot of quote-unquote, and I can't even like do the quote-unquote here, it tells you there's not going to be a lot of free agents available. So the only thing that I'm concerned about here is Charlie's already 34 years old.
6 years.
And I don't understand 6 years in the sense of, did Columbus really believe that somebody else was going to offer him more than three at this point in his career? I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it's all gamesmanship. I get it. Agents do their homework and they throw a number and pitch a campaign and all the rest. And we haven't even got to free agency, but that might have been the way it went down with Waddell. I just think, look, they swung hard, Columbus did, at the deadline with Connor Garland, whose extension hadn't even kicked in yet with Vancouver. So you're already bringing that term of six years with Connor Garland. And now you're doing it with Coyle, too. And despite showing really impressive signs in each of the last 2 years, you didn't scale the mountain and actually get into the playoffs. So, I don't know. It's a strange one, but I think it all comes back to the fact there's not going to be a lot available on free agency.
There's not going to be a lot available. I look at Charlie Coyle, and he had a good season, 20 goals, 58 points. Yeah. But at the same time, he's coming off a season where he had 35 points and only 17 goals. I think what you're going to get out of Charlie Coyle is maybe 15 to 20 goals, maybe 45 to 55 points, and it's going to diminish and it's going to decline over the years. So you're probably you have cap space, yes. Probably you say, nah, we're going to overpay and we want to keep our guys together and reward them because Coyle was good. But I do feel like he's 34 years old. He'll be 40, still making $6 million. That's tough.
He's already played well over 1,000 games. Yes. So if he lives up to the games played over the term of this deal, like we're going to be talking about one of the rare species to ever play in the game at over 1,400 to 1,500 games for his NHL career.
He's the
pretty
same
wild
player he was when he was 24 now.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you thought there was going to be growth. Yeah. He scores 21 goals. He has 56 points. This year, 20 goals.
He's had some dips, and I don't think he's ever quite. He's had two good years in the last five that have been, to me, what Charlie could have been throughout the course of his career. Time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
So, Josh Manson down on the ice with McCarron last night, and Take us through this play and what you saw from the Avs defender and McCarron, the aggressor, to start with.
Well, it's kind of weird because McCarron just goes and finishes a hit on Josh Manson, who has been back since, you know, playing only two games in the previous series against the LA Kings. And then McCarron is on top of Josh Manson, and Manson gives up the old, you know, butt end in the face. It wasn't hard, but there was at least, you know, a good amount of stick sticking out of his glove and giving him that shot. Now, the post-game comments were hilarious, and that's why this is disturbing. You would never want to butt-end somebody and stab somebody with the wrong end of your stick or any end of your stick, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at, you know, McCarron talking about, like, that's dangerous, that's gutless, like, he was getting all the words out there.
Yeah.
And then Manson saying, he threw himself on me after the hit. Like, he didn't throw himself on him.
Well, this is what McCarron had to say in-game at the intermission.
Yeah, I mean, you played against Josh. He's a dirty player. He's always been. Surprised he got away with only a four minute. I'm happy he's still in the game.
It's a pretty good approach by McCarron, by the way.
Josh Manson doesn't fall far from the Dave Manson tree, obviously, in the way that they play.
I think you're forgetting how dirty and tough his father was, because he's quite a ways away from that tree. There are very few that could be that close to that tree in the context of an NHL history.
Maybe because of the way the game was played then and the way the game is played now, like, Josh Manson's considered a dirty player now.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave was a dirty player when players were very dirty. Yeah. But it's hilarious to me how, like, Josh Manson was mad that McCarron was on top of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't throw him. So it wasn't WWE wrestling trying to lay on top of him. That's part of the game.
All right, Brian Gianta coming up here on Sabres Live. We've got pregame coverage tonight as well. 30 minutes prior to puck drop, join us here on MSG for Buick GMC Game Night. And, of course, immediately following, it's the Lexus postgame report. And we'll have all the reaction, highlights, and more. We're heading into a great chat with Brian right after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabre fans, you can purchase right now your tickets for round two, game three, 50-50 raffle. Mm-hmm. It's presented by Northtown Automotive. That's home game number three, which would be game five of the series. These tickets are available now. Go to sabres.com/50-50 or scan the QR code on the screen. We've got a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000, and we all know the benefits of the windfall for our community as the funds get redistributed through the Sabres Foundation, and we don't want you to miss this one. Again, sabres.com/50-50.
All right, Sabres fans, it is time to get on your feet and wave those towels because we have a couple of Sabres alumni in the house. Say hello to Dwayne Rollison and Brian Gianta. Let's go, Buffalo!
Love the intensity from former Sabre captain Brian Gianta. How's the left shoulder?
It's good. I mean, it went on much longer than I thought it was going to, so I had to keep it. I wasn't ready for that.
And then, like, I was, when you were down food in the clubs back in the days in New York City. Woo-hoo!
Right behind the camera was a group of like 7 or 8 Canadians fans with jerseys on, and they were just booing me. They're really disappointed that I was doing it, like, that their captain was a traitor for them.
Well, what's that like for you to watch this, being, you know, that you were the captain on both organization, and, you know, seeing that, you know, Buffalo finally ends the drought, but Montreal's got a lot of really good young talent, and one is Nick Suzuki, who, you know, kind of was the same type of player you were, like, smaller, but so good with the puck. So what's that like watching this from both sides?
I just love the series. I mean, to be honest, I've said it before. I just want good hockey. I just want a good series. You know, like Gallagher's there and the Molsons, and then I still have connections clearly here in Buffalo, live here. So I'm not, like, truly rooting for any organization. I just want the best for both teams. I want a good series. And I think both teams are setting themselves up for the future, and that's good to see, especially Buffalo getting back in the playoffs. Love the intensity around the city, around the team again. Yeah. It's fun to be a part of.
Well, what's the biggest challenge for the Sabres tonight for you?
I mean, listen, I forget who it was. Someone had said might have been Byram. Like, you win the first game, you think you're going to sweep. You lose the next one, you think you're going to lose in five. Like, it's a series. They're both good teams. Adjustments get made. For me, there's no panic. And, you know, I've been a part of them, and I think you just go in. Clearly, this is a big game. You don't want to go down 3-1. But at the end of the day, just continue to do what you're good at and trust in what has brought you there. Trust in the guys that have brought you there. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it will come. You'll come out on top if you're just trusting yourselves and your system and what you've done all along.
Now, the Sabres are making a couple of changes. Konsta Hellenius is going to be in the lineup, centering Quinn and Zucker. McLeod's going to be playing with Greenway and Malenstein. Those are the two changes up front. Do you remember your first playoff game ever? And what do you think that's going to be like for Konsta Hellenius, who you know, obviously have seen with the Rochester Americans, some games with Buffalo this year. So what was that like for you, and what is that going to be like for him, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be shocked by the intensity, the speed of it, how much each play means. I think, but there's only one way to get used to it is to be thrown into it. And for me, it was against Carolina, and you know, it was huge. It was a big step up for me. I loved it. You know, I thought I had a good series, had a couple goals. One was on Kevin Weeks, and one was on an old goalie coach here in Buffalo, Archer Zerbe. So, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Well, the good news for Hellenius, he's obviously had the North American playoff experience in the American Hockey League now for a couple of seasons. So, overall, though, Brian, like what maybe just as you hearken back to your first playoff experiences, do you see a noticeable difference in the game right now, or when it gets to this time of year, does it feel very much the same?
I mean, like I said, the biggest thing that I think I can point to, intensity goes up, physicality goes up, but it's how important each play is. And I remember a mistake I made in that first playoff series. I was a winger. I came down to get the puck at the hash mark. I tried getting it out past the D, and it went to their forward. And you know what? The next 15, 16 years, every time I got the puck on the half wall, I knew not to throw it back up to the blue line and turn it over there. It was just like, it's just ingrained. Those mistakes are ingrained in you, but you have to go through that process in order to truly learn it. So, I think that's what the young guys have to do, and that's where experience comes into play.
Obviously, Montreal, Buffalo, it's a pretty big rivalry. It goes back to the Adams divisions back in the 80s, and then in the 90s, Montreal swept Buffalo in 93 to go on win the Cup. Buffalo sweeps Montreal in 98. They haven't played since, but you talk about your time with the Devils, and I don't recall, so I'm asking you, did you ever play against the Rangers or against the Flyers in the playoffs, or this is a big rivalry between the two teams?
Yeah, both. Yeah. Rangers, for sure. We ended up sweeping them. I forget what year it was. We swept them. I think that was the only time we had faced the Rangers in the playoffs when I was in New Jersey. And then we also played Philly, and I believe we lost to Philly that year when we were in Jersey. And then we lost to Philly in the conference finals when I was in Montreal. So great places to play, great experiences. And, you know, that rivalry is definitely huge. And that rivalry is driven by playoff matchups. The regular season is one thing, but true rivalries are determined in the playoffs.
Now, the rivalries don't just stay on the ice, and obviously, so you have a house in Buffalo. Do you still have your house in Rochester that you did, like, build 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we got this tweet. We saw this tweet online just this past recently about this fan that says, "Oh, man, I have really, really funny story about Gienta that I'm not afraid to admit today. My friend's dad was an inspector, electrical inspector, did some work at his house, Rochester. And he wrote, 'Go Rangers,' in the back of the drywall." It's probably still there because he was a Rangers fan. You were with the Devils. Have you found the Go Rangers in the back of the drywall somewhere in your house?
I have not, because we did the basement. We did the basement remodel back then. And then we did another full house remodel, but just the upper parts. And so it's probably still there. I'm sure we'll find it one day when they redo the basement.
Do you feel like now you got to go back, and anywhere you can get behind, you got to go look?
I got to make sure it's not anywhere visible. It's a curse down there for sure. You can't have Go Rangers.
Well, I'm sorry to spoil it, but somebody had fun with it. I mean, it's just part of it. You mentioned, obviously, the rivalry with the Flyers, the Rangers when you were with the Devils. I remember a goal you scored on me when you were with the Canadians, right? You came down and you shot it far side. It was a terrible goal. But we do have this clip of a goal you scored when you were with the Devils against me when I was with the Flyers. There you are coming in on the rebound. Like, I don't know what I'm pointing at. I'm mad at the ref. Like,
You're pointing at your D-men. That's a bad teammate right there. You're looking at your D-men. Like, what happened? Why didn't you pick him up?
You know what? You want to know something? I never played well against the Devils. I hated playing the Devils. I hated playing in that old Continental Airline Arena. And producer Sam said, I got pulled in this game. Figure it out. We were at the old Continental Airline, and I got pulled because you scored on me, Gio. So thanks a lot for that.
Hey, I love the memories. I love doing that to you, buddy. But you know what? Marty Brodeur hated playing in Philly, too. That was a little-known fact. He hated being in Philly, hated playing in Philly. It's just one of those things. He just never felt comfortable in a building. Yeah.
Well, you were comfortable in a lot of places, including going back to your college days. Enjoy this little snippet about one of your greatest college goals.
Including, of course, the one-handed goal.
It was a basic two-on-two, and I took Eck to the outside, and he was leaning on me a little, and I couldn't get I defend him off with my one hand, and I just went to the net. And put a shot on, and it got by Micho.
Watch the goal on videotape again and again, and you still might feel you needed to witness it firsthand to believe it.
One-hand goal, Gio. What a flick of the wrist that was as a right-hand shot down the right wing and just turning the one hand and just letting it go. Like, that was pretty special.
Alfie Micho was off his angle for sure. Like, it's a bad angle. Goalie's bad. I mean, listen, it was a good goal, but there's no way that should go in.
Alfie was a good goalie with Maine back then, right? He was really good with Maine, and obviously. But, I mean, what was that like for you, college, you know, being a, you know, just a, I mean, you were probably, what, 125 pounds back then? Like, you were just a skinny kid, but, man, did you have blazing speed and those type of skills?
Yeah, I loved it. It was the best 4 years of my life, you know, like it's all your buddies, you're living with them. We still keep in touch, the 8 roommates that we're together with for the 4 years. We get together all the time. It's nothing you can replicate in pro hockey. And we had a ton of success. We won a national championship. We're in the finals 3 out of my 4 years, and we lost in the semis the other year. So we had good teams, good teammates, just a fun city, fun college to be a part of.
You were very critical of that goaltender, Micho, there on the goal that you scored. Were you critical, or, you know, did you challenge your goalie, or do you challenge your goalies a lot as a coach? And also, what did you learn from Marty St. Louis when coaching against him?
I try to stay off of the goalies. They're super sensitive, and you never know what's going
to
get them rattled.
Leave that to Leggio, right? You leave that to Leggio.
Stay hands off. Let the goalie coach handle that. Like, I just, you know, I'll whisper under my breath, he should have saved that or things like that. But that's no different than when I was a player. And then Marty, I loved playing against Marty. We had some great battles, some good teams. He was at Mid-Fairfield. I was with the Junior Sabres. And we had studs on our team, and it was just always a fun matchup. And we're both very similar, laid back, kind of teach them and let them play. Wouldn't get super intense on the bench. So, yeah, for sure, it's good matchups against him.
Well, I know that obviously your son is going into Niagara University after a junior career with the Junior Amherst for next season. But would coaching be in your kind of future? Because Marty made the jump, right, from coaching his boys, and then, boom, he was in Montreal. Yes, his former agent became the GM, and it was, and Vinny LeCavalier was an advisor and all of that. But you've got a network, and would coaching be something that you're looking at in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that I love the game. I love being around the game, and the biggest part for me was making sure, you know, I enjoyed the time with the kids. That was going by too quick, and so my oldest son Adam's going off to Niagara to play there. My daughter is graduating high school, going down to Mercer to play soccer down there, and then we still have our youngest who's starting high school. So definitely open. I've had opportunities that certainly weren't right at the timing with the family. Coaching's there. I liked the development that I did in spurts with the Sabres and Amerks. So definitely open to being in the game. It's just a matter of the timing with the family.
What's your number two sport? Now that you mentioned that one of your kids is in soccer, what's your number two?
I played soccer all growing up in through high school, and then I had to kind of give it up there. So soccer and lacrosse were big for me. Soccer took the edge, and all my kids have played pretty much all three.
True or false, and this is digging way deep with producer Sam, that when you arrive at BC, they have to build a new stick rack because your sticks weren't fitting, and they kept falling underneath the separators that keeps them up.
It wasn't a full rack they had to build, but they had to move the pegs lower. So, like, where my sticks sat were pegs. So it was the rest of the team out here, and then I was a little lower in the peg.
That's
awesome. Hey, tonight you've got a little appearance in advance of Game 4 over at Seneca Casino. Tell us about just what you've been feeling from Sabre fans when you have these opportunities for meet and greets, like over at Seneca Buffalo Creek tonight.
Yeah, it was great. I went to a game at versus Boston. I went to game one against Montreal, and it was fun to, you know, see the suites and walk around and see all the people excited about the game, excited about the series, excited to be in playoffs again. And I'm sure it'll be no different tonight. It should be interesting. The watch party, come out, say hello. We'll be signing autographs, taking pictures, and just enjoying the environment down there and rooting on our Sabres.
Yeah, you and Cody McCormick, have fun. We'll be in studio pregame and postgame, but I'm sure we'll get some good looks on social media of you and Cody out there getting the crowd going at Buffalo Creek Casino.
No doubt.
Is Cody still, like, in unbelievable shape?
He's so strong. So strong.
He's always had that. He's, like, had that old man strength since he's been young.
Yeah, he grabs me with one arm and I can't move. He's like, here, that's it. So
clearly one thing I was never blessed with is old man strength. I can vouch for it after my latest birthday. Gio, great to see you. Enjoy
good
tonight.
Good to see you guys.
There he is, Brian Gionta. We're getting set for Game 4 tonight between the Sabres and the Habs. And, of course, our pregame coverage begins at 6:30 on MSG. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Here's your chance to win a game-worn jersey from this 25-26 season. You can bid on the black and red ones that were worn on the ice by your favorite players this year. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. Auction is open, and it goes until May 17th at 9 p.m. So place your bids today at sabres.com/auction. Poll results. How are you feeling about heading into Game 4 tonight? Full confidence, cautiously optimistic, slight doubt, full panic mode. Marty, the leader right now by the slimmest of margins is...
Slight doubt by the slimmest of margin. At least we got some people off the full panic mode with some of the changes today. It was in the 30s. It got down to 29%. I think here Oswald says, Sabres are going to win today. Never been more confident going into this one. I love the confidence of Oswald in this. I think the Montreal Canadiens have a say in this. I think the Sabres have to be much, much better defensively. And so we'll see. But this is a long series. Mm-hmm. I mean, being down 2-1 is being down 2-1. You win a game, all of a sudden, you know, you switch things around. Right, Brian Gionta, we just had, said, you know, Bo Byram said, you win one, you feel like you're going to sweep. You lose one, you feel like you're going to get swept. Mm-hmm. I was here, he said that, right? Yep. So, he that's the way that the momentum kind of goes up and down.
Some Western bias among the GM of the Year finalists, which I'm thankful for because the West deserves more attention. Guerin, McFarland, and Verbeek are your trio. And how about a this date in Sabres history that was certainly fun?
Here's Ward, back to Pekka again. Pekka's shot, deflected wide of the net. Ward hits a three, out in front, never got his shot away. Back to Pekka, Pekka's shot, scores! The captain does it again! The captain does it early in the second overtime period! Michael Pekka salts it away!
And as we played for you off the top of the show, they would go on to a sweep of the series with a fourth game win, and that was thanks to Donald Odette. But Pekka's double OT marker was the difference in Game 3.
Eight hot dogs that night, Duffer.
What?
I had eight hot dogs that night.
Really?
Two after the first, two after the second,
two you know
after the
third,
two after the first overtime. And I would have gotten 10, 12, 14 if it had kept going.
I thought you said, I hate hot dogs.
The number eight hot dogs is what I consumed that night.
Birthdays on this day. We mentioned Zach Benson, of course. He's 21 today. Expectation for Benny tonight.
I think more of the same for Benny, but I do feel like, okay, Norris has got to get scoring here. Like, Benny and Doan are going on a forecheck, but Norris has got to score.
Changes at all positions for the Sabres tonight. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:30 here on MSG. We'll see you then.